Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm your host, Henry R. Slinian, and welcome to this episode of the Future of Money podcast that is being recorded live in premise in Zurich today. Before we start, I want to say a big thank you to the 500,000 of you follow me every week. This podcast, The Future of Money, is now ranked in the top 5% of all podcasts globally on Spotify. Thousands of you from over 160 countries globally are tuning in each week. So massive thank you for all your support. As all you loyal listeners know, my goal with this podcast is very simple. It's to go deep in some of the biggest ideas, trends, and developments we are seeing in the field of crypto. And hopefully empower you with this information and then let you make your own decision on what their impact could be on the future of finance and the future of money. And to do this, I invite each week one of the leading figures of the global crypto community to have this one-on-one conversation amongst crypto aficionados and discuss some of these topics. Today's episode is part of our investor series. As some of you listeners who have been following us for some time know, we've been trying to do a couple episodes really looking at how we invest in crypto, what are the trends we are seeing, and what are some of the positive and the red flags that allocators should look at when they're deploying capital into the crypto space. And today, my guest is Richard Byward. He's the managing partner at CEES Capital. He's the head of liquid alternatives. One thing you may not know about Richard is that he pays his babysitter in Bitcoin. That's commitment there. Richard, great to have you with us on the show.
Great. Very good to be here, Henry.
Before we start, we just have to do our regular disclosures. First of all, anything that is discussed on this podcast is not investment advice and should be seen as information purposes only. Also, please note that CEES Crest, where Richard Byward is the managing partner, is an allocator in one of the funds managed by NonBlocks Capital, a hedge fund that I'm a shareholder of. Richard, let's kick it off and let's start. Before we dive into some of the bigger topics, can you share maybe with our audience a bit about your background and also about CEES Capital, CEES Crest, and what are you guys looking at doing in the space?
Sure, absolutely, Henry, and great to sit down with you again. So yeah, I spent my career in traditional finance predominantly. I started my career as an investment banker. I was a trader in derivatives and convertible bonds. Did that in London. Then I moved to Tokyo, set up a desk there. Was working for the Japanese bank Nomura. We acquired Lehman Brothers Asia and European operations in 2008. That led to a whole change in the way that markets started to function. At that point, I started looking at alternative money, and I started investing in gold quite heavily. Unfortunately, I didn't discover Bitcoin properly until about 2017. And then that took me on a journey that ended up running a crypto company. We listed the company on NASDAQ through a SPAC. We went into a strategic partnership with Binance. At that point, I stepped down and I took a bit of time off. And now I work for CEES Capital, where, as you said, I'm managing partner. I look after the hedge fund business. So a lot of what I did in traditional finance before was dealing with hedge funds, dealing with the products that hedge funds use. So I knew all the biggest hedge funds in the world. And now I'm on the other side of that, investing in those hedge funds today. And as you mentioned, one of the products that we recently launched nearly 3 months ago now was a fund of crypto hedge funds. Mm-hmm. And obviously the fund that you're involved with is one of the investments in that portfolio. Mm-hmm.
Can you show more about, for the benefit of our audience, more about CEES Crest and the new crypto fund to fund offering that you guys have and what type of managers you guys are allocating in and what are you guys looking for?
So for us, what we want to try and do is create a very strong base of market neutral managers. Everything that we do at CEES Capital is focused on providing uncorrelated returns to the market. So if you look at any of our products, we were up in every single one of our products last year, 2022, when the market was just all over the place. That's really what we strive to do, is provide uncorrelated returns. And with crypto, it's no different. We want to make sure that no matter what the market's doing, we're providing positive returns for our investors. So we have a very strong base of what we call market neutral managers, of which obviously NonBlocks is one. But what we want to do is really blend different strategies in there that, you know, no matter what the market, these market neutral managers are making money. Then one of my partners on the fund is a guy called Willy Wu, who's pretty well known in the community. And Willy has, you know, obviously a particular skill set in reading all the data that is on every blockchain. And we particularly focus on Bitcoin, largely because the most amount of volume transacts there. And we use that as an indicator to tell us where we are in the market cycle, which point we are, which epoch. So we divide the market cycle into four different epochs. So right now we're in what we call the reaccumulation phase. That's sort of the early stage of the bull market we're moving into. It's a dangerous point to be trying to go too long. So we only have a 7.5% allocation to directional managers. And within that directional manager bucket, we have quant strategies only. So a lot of the fund of funds out there, and actually the fund of funds that I previously ran, for that directional basket, we actually included venture managers.
Interesting.
And so you know the problems with that. That causes a liquidity issue, right? So you really can't be dynamic with the portfolio. So what we've decided to do here, and obviously Willie was very involved in the way that we designed the portfolio and continues to be on a monthly basis when we look at it very dynamically, is that we said we want every single manager to be super liquid. So actually we provide monthly liquidity terms. We make sure that we don't have any mismatched liquidity. So it's very important to us that we don't have any venture type investments in that portfolio. So as I say, the directional portion is trend pretty much only within that quant bucket. Then, you know, we have, as I say, we're in the reaccumulation phase right now. The next phase will be the bull market. Then we can really shift quite heavily directional. The reason for that, even though you can get big drawdowns in the bull market, is our market neutral managers will be making a lot more money. So that gives us a lot more buffer to be flexible with the upside in that directional piece. Then, because it's trend, even when we go into the early bear, we actually remain a little bit directional because those trend managers can make more money, or not more money, they can make some money as markets reverse because they can be quite trendy. So we actually say, okay, in the early bear, which is the third part of the cycle from where we are now, that's when we say, okay, we can go 15% towards directional. And then finally, the late bear market, so what you saw between March 2022 and March 2023, that is a 0% allocation to directional. The reason being that the market becomes very choppy. It's extremely hard to predict. And these directional managers get really chopped up, even the trend guys. So we don't want any exposure at that point. And that's how we construct the portfolio.
It's interesting, pre-bear, reaccumulation, and bull market. So it's interesting from your perspective, Richard, we are in this pre-accumulation market. The question is, how long does this epoch? I love, by the way, the Ethereum reference. I know you're not a big Ethereum fan, but with the epochs there. But we're in this, I guess, period. And the question is, when do we go into a bull market? Mm-hmm. On this point, like, what is your view on the market right now? When you're looking at it, what is your house view or personal view on when we may go into a bull market? And we moved from one epoch to the other one.
Yeah, look, it's such an interesting moment right now. I mean, I wake up every day, look at the price of Bitcoin, one of the first things I do. And I'm always just astounded that we're still sat here. You know, you've got the whole Bitcoin ETF narrative going on that we all know is going to unlock trillions of dollars potentially from the 401k market. Now, not all of that money is going to go into Bitcoin, but now they have a pure Bitcoin option with a Bitcoin spot ETF potentially coming down the road. So that is going to be a very big seismic change for the market. And we are at, and I often talk about this when I'm explaining to people where we are with Bitcoin, you know, we've issued 19.5 million Bitcoin already. We have 1.5 million Bitcoin left to issue over the next 117 years. Right? It's a remarkable situation that we're in. And, you know, we're coming into the next halving. So Bitcoin's only getting scarcer. If you look at all the demand, and obviously now working with Willie, we see a lot more color about what's happening on chain. You know, you've got all these crabs and shrimps, which we call the smaller wallets that are doing daily, weekly, monthly accumulation. They're accounting for like 28,000 Bitcoin. They're buying 28,000 Bitcoin a month, right? Then you combine that with the three major entities we know that continue to buy Bitcoin. El Salvador, one a day. MicroStrategy, approximately three a day. Tether, approximately 30 a day. So those are the only three entities we really know about. There's definitely more out there. And yeah, I mean, I think we're just in a remarkable period where it's, as this Bitcoin price remains down here, and Willie and I slightly differ in our views here, he's very concerned about the amount of paper Bitcoin that there is out there, the futures that get sold against Bitcoin. He feels that it's suppressing the price. My view is that's a positive, because the longer that it stays down here, those guys that are putting cash dollars into Bitcoin and buying 28,000 Bitcoin a day, you know, they're just able to accumulate more Bitcoin now, right? And then there's going to be this moment where we have the halving, super inelastic in terms of what happens, and there's going to be a shock. And I think it could actually happen before the halving this time.
It's interesting. I've never heard the expression, the crabs and the worms. I love that. But it's interesting that your thesis on it is based on some of these big buyers and the halving. What about macro conditions? Do you think macro conditions could have also a driver on the price? I mean, I would argue in many cases, there's obviously a lot of, like, you know, the ETF approvals, you know, there's a lot of legal news coming up. But what about the impact of macro or in rates and others on the price of Bitcoin?
Yeah, look, I mean, this is to Willie's point, right? The futures market is defined by what's happening in the dollar, right? Dollar is, you know, so strong right now, and it's surpassing many forecasts of where it should be at this point in time. And that's sort of breaking all people's models in the macro. But I mean, like, you look at what's going on in macro, it is all over the place, right? And so you've got a situation where Bitcoin today is priced as a risk asset. So the stronger the dollar trades, the more that macro managers that trade the futures are going to be selling, which leads to a situation where Bitcoin is suppressed, even though we're going into a massive supply shock.
Yeah.
Right. So again, I keep saying it's positive for the price. The longer it stays down here, the more aggressive the shock will be.
I want to talk about how to get from the fund perspective. Before, I want to ask one question on Bitcoin, because what I find interesting with you, Richard, is you are obviously, for lack of a more polite term, you are a Bitcoin maxi. I know that you don't believe in not only Ethereum, but other altcoins. Can you share maybe with our audience why you're such a believer, let's say, why you're such a big believer in Bitcoin, and why you're not such a big believer in the various layer ones and other tokens that we see in the market?
Look, you and I have this back and forth a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I feel you're one of the few credible people remaining that's talking about the broad landscape of crypto. And you have a valid point, right? That crypto as a broad base is probably going to facilitate a lot of different things. The point that I continue to make is that when someone comes to me and they say, you know, where should I put my money in the crypto market? I say Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is a certain thing right now. Bitcoin has won its particular bucket. The thing that really concerns me about Ethereum is it's trading as if it's won its bucket, where it has at least 12 viable competitors that are taking market share off it in terms of things that are being built on those protocols every single day. So Ethereum has a long way to fall if, you know, it doesn't manage to get any more clearer leadership within that pack, which it doesn't. It's losing market share every day. So my view strongly is Ethereum is going to fall quite heavily. But I'm not sitting here telling you how to allocate a crypto portfolio. My point has always been that you are at a massive information disadvantage against the crypto VCs. And look, I have a lot of friends that are crypto VCs, okay? And even our partners, CMCC, they are a crypto VC. But my feeling for your average investor in crypto, you know, and not the CMCC guys, but I've heard many joke about it, retail is the exit liquidity. So at the point where retail starts to get involved with crypto, that is the point where these VCs who bought very early at massive discounts are starting to sell. So, you know, you get the story, get the hype, all of this going on about these various different blockchains. And frankly, it's a minefield. It's a casino with 99.9% of it is going to fail. So, hand on heart, how can I tell anyone, what should you invest in? Bitcoin. Bitcoin only. Don't get distracted with that. If you really, really want to invest in crypto, give your money to a crypto VC. They have the informational advantage, and you don't want to be playing against them.
But I mean, What is your view on Web3 then? I mean, do you believe that this Web3 ecosystem, smart contract ecosystem, DeFi ecosystem is going to grow and expand? Because for that, you need maybe not Ethereum, but you need the different layer ones to power and actually be the foundational layer of this growth.
I definitely think that there is something there. There's something happening. But the point is that I used to run a crypto company. We had a very cynical CTO. He was always like, tell me why I can't do this with an Excel database. And it's a valid commentary, right? Right now, most of these crypto coins are not decentralized at all. Just really, you know, someone running a database. Like a lot of these projects that were run, bonds issued on Bitcoin, they're controlled side chains of Avalanche, of Algorand, of Ethereum. Yeah. It's just not there yet. And there are projects that are exploring layer twos or layer threes even on Bitcoin, and leveraging that as a network, and that's a truly decentralized network. So, you know, maybe that's the way this all looks eventually. So I'm not at all sold on the underlying protocols that are now competing with Polkadot, mm-hmm. Ethereum, Algorand, all of this crowd. I don't know if one of those wins it, but if they don't, the truth is that the investors are gonna absolutely lose their shirt.
Interesting perspective. Let's shift it a bit from that perspective to some of the managers, right? So when you're investing managers, most of them are probably trading not only Bitcoin, but also all the other layer ones. Mm-hmm. I guess from your perspective, how do you look at that? I guess if they're getting alpha, yeah. It's fine or?
Absolutely. I mean, these guys, you know, I often say the way that I present all of this, if I'm doing a talk with investors is, you know, crypto, don't try this at home. Right? You need to know what you're doing. It's extremely dangerous. But when we assess these managers, we assess their capacity to be able to deal with, be it staking, be it, you know, a particular functionality within a wallet, you know, across a broad spectrum of crypto. And again, we have investors that have invested in our fund who, when we first sat down and spoke to them, that I don't believe in crypto. You know, that's fine. You don't really need to believe in crypto. This is an alpha product, right? You know, Seas has a long history of allocating to hedge funds, 28 years of basically isolating good pockets of alpha. And before I even joined the organization, our portfolio management team was saying, you know, we need to be finding new alpha within the traditional hedge fund world. They'd already started to look at crypto and say, hang on, there's something here.
Interesting.
There's an element of alpha that looks a lot like what we observed in the traditional hedge fund industry in the 80s and 90s, which was labeled the golden age of hedge funds. This is a little bit what crypto looks like today. We're excited about it. It doesn't mean that we are excited about crypto. And in fact, you know, one of the reasons we partnered with CMCC is because of their deep expertise in crypto, that we can go to these managers, make sure that what they're saying makes sense and that they're running controls, they run their wallets correctly, they use the right service provider. So all of this features in our various stages of diligence of a manager, which, you know, we do 2 to 3 months of diligence overall on a single manager. So it's a very deep process.
So how would, like, maybe walk us through, for the benefit of our audience, I think there is a lot of misconceptions about the crypto hedge fund industry. And to be fair, I think investing in crypto hedge funds, it's a very murky world. I mean, it's very difficult. Can you share maybe with our audience, what is a bit of the process and how do you look at hedge fund managers? What do you like? What you dislike? And what are some of the pieces of advice you would have for anybody in our audience looking at allocating to crypto hedge funds?
Yeah, so it's a minefield. Right. Even allocating to traditional hedge funds is dangerous. Right. You know, everybody knows the story of Madoff and what went on there. Interestingly, Seas, that was already allocating very heavily and advising clients on allocation to hedge fund, very strongly advised people away from Madoff because, you know, we always go the extra mile with diligence and thoroughness, and no one could understand this split strike strategy or whatever derivative strategy he was claiming to run. It didn't make any sense. So the Seas family, who were, you know, extremely involved in the business back then, were like, no, this makes no sense. So, you know, traditional hedge fund selection is already something that is a very detailed process. When you combine that with crypto, it gets even more murky and dangerous, which is why we have such a thorough IDD, investment due diligence process, operational due diligence process. And actually, when we have a quantitative manager, we do a technical due diligence process. So we look at how they've built their model, how they've tested the model, the different pattern sets that they've used for that testing, making sure that they've used different pattern sets rather than just purely, oh, this worked in the past, so it'll work in the future, because we all know that that's not the truth, right? And then looking forward, how once they've launched the strategy, how that's then performed. So you put all of that together to create a picture to really understand the way this model has been built. Gibraltar regulator has, it's actually a requirement of managers operating in Gibraltar that they need to use a Gibraltar-based admin. Now, we've seen two managers that we really like, but they're regulated in Gibraltar, so they have to use a Gibraltar-based admin. These Gibraltar-based admins don't have the technical capability to pull from an API pricing from crypto exchanges. So guess what? They're getting the pricing from the manager on the market. And you're like, okay, guys, that stinks.
It's a recipe for disaster.
There's no way we can invest in a fund like this. So yeah, it's really unfortunate that we still look at these very outdated models, things that we've seen in the traditional hedge fund industry that really, you know, lead the way to fraud and big problems. So yeah, I mean, this is something we're very focused on always.
And I think this is, it's interesting because I would argue that in the crypto industry right now, a fund-to-fund makes a lot of sense because there's a requirement to do due diligence on these different managers, understand the space, and you need some experience to do so, right? I mean, I think that you can argue that, do we still need fund-to-funds and traditional hedge funds? Maybe yes, maybe no. But I think the crypto hedge fund, this is definitely like the cycle, exactly like you were mentioning before. We're at the space where the next couple of years, there'll be a massive demand for fund-to-funds to do due diligence on the underlying hedge fund. On that point, Richard, I mean, what is the feedback you're getting from your end investors? Obviously, you're part of a bigger, the CIS group, but what is the feedback you're getting when you're talking to investors? Let's say right now we're sitting in Zurich, or we've been talking to your Swiss investors and other groups. Is there apprehension towards crypto? Is there interest? Are there fears? Like, what is the sentiment you're getting from there?
Crypto right now in the broad community, no one has any interest whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's Bitcoin is flatlining at sort of 26, 27,000 and has done for what feels like months.
Yeah.
And when it gets like that, people think there's nothing to see here. There's nothing that we should be doing. So, you know, I think it's a fantastic time to allocate to an asset class when nobody is paying attention.
Yeah.
And that's one of the key things that we talk about when we sit down with investors. It doesn't create much of an urgency to push the button and write a ticket. But, you know, what's interesting in Switzerland is that FINMA have stated that discretionary portfolios within banks, the only way that they can allocate to an asset class like this is via a fund of funds. So actually, there's a Swiss banking association requirement that discretionary portfolios need to be allocating to crypto via fund of funds. So that obviously means that, you know, these banks should be looking, when they want to be making an allocation in crypto, they've got to be looking at the best fund of funds in the industry, which is why we really designed it. We come from a banking group. We really designed it with a banking group's focus and board in mind. In fact, I had to get this approved by the board of the bank. And so, you know, I'm sat there with a bunch of people that, you know, really do not believe in crypto necessarily. It just happened. And we have really had to demonstrate how we had very differentiated risk controls.
Yeah.
And that's something we should talk about. I mean, if you're an institutional investor thinking about crypto right now, one of the biggest risks you need to consider is platform risk, another FTX. So one of the things we built into, and again, this was on the back of the board's request when we were going through the approval process, is actually we designed, in partnership obviously with Willy and CMCC, a tool to monitor the underlying wallets of every single exchange on an hourly basis. So we watch for trends in change, And 2 days after we launched the fund, actually, 1st of July, so it was 3rd of July, actually, was the first date of July. On the 5th of July, we got a red flag on Huobi. Huobi's balances in Bitcoin. Huobi's the Chinese exchange you know well. Yeah. Their Bitcoin balances had dropped by 50% in like 24 hours. So we flagged it to our managers. We had one manager that had exposure to Huobi. They pulled their balances within 3.5 hours of us giving them the flag. And then 5 weeks later, we find out that onshore, the Chinese police had been questioning employees of Huobi, and there seems to be a major issue at Huobi. But this is fantastic because we saw this on the data 5 weeks before the rest of the market found out there's an issue over there. So this is really the sort of control protection that we've put in place around the fund, and I think it's extremely robust.
It's interesting, and I would argue that what you've done there is not possible in TradFi. Here, yeah. You have the benefit of seeing the balances. You cannot go see the reserves of any of the bank. I mean, yes, you have your audited financials, but this is one of the benefits of seeing it live with a crypto company, right?
Well, that's it. That's exactly it. And this is what we often say is, you have never before in an asset class been able to see every single transaction, every wallet originating that transaction, every wallet receiving that transaction for eternity in the blockchain, right? That's a big data set that with AI, you can really produce some very interesting things. And this is what we obviously do with Willy, and this is how we divide the market into those epochs, because we can see who's doing what.
Very interesting. And when it comes to counterparty risk, right? So obviously you spend a lot of time in traditional finance. What do you think it needs to change if as an allocator you had this, the lamp came in, there's a genie that came out, it will grant you a couple of wishes, right? Yeah. What are the wishes you would have for the, not only the crypto hedge funds, but also the broader industry that you think will make the industry stronger?
I really think, and again, you and I talk about this a lot, I think that the crypto part of the crypto asset industry that obviously includes Bitcoin really needs a lot of work in cleaning up. One of the reasons that we get such preferential terms as the first banking group investing in all these crypto managers is because they want the credibility of being able to say, we have the first banking group allocating to crypto hedge fund managers invested in our hedge fund. That's a real sign of credibility. The problem for crypto is this credibility that has been destroyed by the Alex Mashinskis, the Do Kwons, the Sam Bankman-Frieds of this world. And unfortunately, this is only likely to continue in that area that is crypto, because as we've discussed, 99.9% of it is really just a head fake to make money for these scammers. And I really think it's sad that the industry continues to be pulled back by what these guys are doing. There's a lot of very good people like yourself and the team at Nine Blocks, what you're trying to do. I think it's a real shame that we're often always trying to, you know, cover the credibility aspects because of what these guys have done and continue to do.
You know, Richard, and as we're getting close to the end of the show, you know, in a traditional, you spent many years working in traditional finance. If we look today at the traditional hedge fund space, it's over $3-4 trillion of assets. But the crypto hedge fund space is only a couple billion dollars. I mean, there's still tremendous growth to take place, right? What do you think is needed for some of these large traditional hedge funds to enter the crypto space? And also some of the large traditional allocators to enter the space? Is it regulation? Is it the media has to come out? We need more price action. What do you think are the catalysts you're looking for that you think will have a meaningful impact on bringing these guys over?
Well, look, one thing I say is it's good for all of us that they're not moving over yet because the alpha is still there and it's so rich, right? So you rightly point out, well, it's all based on that credibility issue, right? If you're a manager like Millennium, you're running, I don't know what it is today, $56 billion. Why would you move into crypto where that could end up tarnishing your reputation, that could end up losing you a decent amount of your AUM to gain a couple of $100 million in AUM? Doesn't make any sense whatsoever for these managers. So that credibility bar is a problem. Regulation will help that. Obviously, we're seeing that develop in various different jurisdictions. But I would say, you know, while it's still a bit the Wild West, it gives us an opportunity to really make that alpha. But I would say the next part of all of this, and how does the market accommodate a Millennium or a Citadel start to come in? Well, it's really the expansion of the derivatives market. When you see proper regulation around derivatives, so you get a viable options market, that will be the thing that really expands what the hedge funds can do. Because, you know, I spent the large majority of my career in derivatives. This is a big, big focus of your traditional hedge fund managers, is having option strategies, which then translate into vol swaps, VAR swaps, and everything down that sort of esoteric derivative route. And once you get that with crypto, that means that the market will mature. It will mean you'll get a decline in volatility, but you'll have a much broader product base that people can take advantage of. And that will allow the bigger tickets to come in.
And where do you think we are right now when it comes to crypto derivatives? Obviously, there's the volumes of crypto perpetual swaps or Bitcoin perpetual swaps, you know, are multiple times of that of spot. But where do you think we are in the evolution of crypto derivatives right now?
We're still early. I mean, the only real liquidity today is on a platform called Deribit, which, it's difficult because it's not a regulated platform. Yeah. There isn't adequate regulation anywhere for them to operate in a proper regulated jurisdiction. You have to collateralize those options with Bitcoin. So you kind of have this double leverage kind of situation, which is hard to manage. Yeah. It's not straightforward. So we're still at a very early stage in the options market. Spreads are really wide still. There's not a great amount of liquidity, which again provides opportunities for managers that we look at. And so that is really showing how nascent this is. But if you look at the traditional market in the 90s, when we started to see an explosion, it just went crazy. Trillions of dollars now operate on a daily basis in derivatives. So it's
The positive impact is actually quite meaningful. I think there's a lot of misconceptions around derivatives, especially in crypto, but I think there's a big role to play. Mm-hmm. My last question, Richard, before we move to the final round, round of questions is, you know, in the traditional finance, the hedge fund industry is obviously a very developed prime brokerage industry, you know, where there's portfolio margining, lending, borrowing, and the whole suite of services that you know very well from your past life. When do you think we'll have this in crypto, and what do you think is needed for us to have kind of prime brokerage offerings, and what the impact could be on the broader crypto ecosystem?
We already have it. You know, I mean, you've got Coinbase Prime that is starting to build it out, but actually a company that I think is far more interesting is Hidden Road. I'm sure you've heard of those guys. A bunch of PB guys that moved from BAML, Goldman, all these places into crypto to really bring the prime services model into crypto. This is going to be a game changer. The guys at Hidden Road do a very good job. We've always been very impressed with them. So we actually work quite closely with them in introducing their managers and vice versa. I think, you know, to that point, prime brokerage plus derivatives.
Game changer.
This is really how the market expands exponentially.
Richard, we're running out of time. I want to make time to some of our fire round round of questions. So I'm going to ask you quick questions. I need quick answers, one or two word answers.
Sure.
You ready?
Yeah, go.
Richard, you now live in Switzerland. What's your favorite thing about Switzerland?
I think the people, actually. The people in Swiss Germany, particularly, are so friendly. I really love it here.
Zug in Switzerland was obviously crypto valley for a long time. Mm. What's your view on that? Bullish or bearish?
I love Zug. I actually live in Zug. Yeah. I think it's a beautiful place. In terms of what they're doing in Crypto Valley, yeah, they're really trying to bring the industry forward and support crypto businesses coming to Switzerland. I think it's fantastic. Even the Canton have advertised on their door, we accept Bitcoin. So it's fantastic. I love it.
You lived in Hong Kong for many years. What is the one thing you miss the most about Hong Kong?
The convenience. Hong Kong is just, yeah, so convenient, you know.
So you have the chance to hire a TradFi hedge fund manager as an intern. Which PM or hedge fund manager would you want to hire as your intern for the summer?
As an intern for the summer? Stan Druckenmiller.
Hey, why is that?
I just think he's a legend. I mean, the guy has made money, you know, in every market cycle consistently. he's now coming round to Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I'd love to be able to teach him a thing or two about Bitcoin.
Sam Bankman-Fried gives you a phone call and asks you for a piece of advice. What advice do you have for SBF?
I put the phone down.
Changpeng Zhao, CZ, calls you for a piece of advice on how to deal with the FUD. What advice do you give him?
I slam the phone.
What skill you wish more people in crypto would have? What one skill you wish more people in crypto would have?
I think it's really to understand the ethical balance, and I joke about CZ and SBF, yeah. CZ particularly, and this is the same thing that I would come to with this question, is that I think people need to really take the step and say, ethically, how do we protect investors, right? We really need to think about protecting investors against all of these scams. And CZ honestly is in a position to be able to do that if he decided to take that path.
What's the one piece of advice you have to anyone who's getting into crypto?
Buy Bitcoin.
Your daughter comes to you and says she wants to get into the crypto industry. Where do you recommend her to get her first job?
Oh, that's a great question. It's funny, my daughter this morning, she said to me, you know, I really want to keep learning about Bitcoin. She talks about the fiat cage of
entrapment.
Yeah, she's a very visual young girl. She talks about the visual cage of entrapment of fiat and how it leads to slavery and how Bitcoin is freedom. So I'd want her to work for a Bitcoin-focused company. There's a very good one here in Switzerland.
Amazing.
Called Relay.
Okay.
And that's where I'd recommend she works.
Gary Gensler gives you a call, wants to have lunch with you. What's the one thing you tell him over lunch to Gary Gensler?
I'd say, look, Gary, I mean, in all seriousness, how can you genuinely say that you're not accepting a Bitcoin spot ETF because it is potentially a manipulated market, but you've approved a futures Bitcoin ETF that actually allows for greater manipulation? So it doesn't correlate. There's something problematic there. And, you know, I'm sure Gary's a well-intentioned guy and he should see the light here.
What is the one country or region that is exciting you as future crypto hub?
I love El Salvador.
El Salvador,
what's happening there, of course. You know, I think Bukele has really done a great job in turning the country around. I think that when they issue that volcano bond or financial product, whatever it ends up being, to finance the geothermal infrastructure for Bitcoin mining, I think a lot of other countries with heavy burden of IMF debt will wake up to the opportunity that this provides them to alleviate themselves of this debt burden.
Interesting. Maybe we'll have a Bitcoin standard there with some of these countries as legal tender.
I think it's going to happen.
And the last question, Richard Byward, managing partner at Seas Capital. Richard, my traditional question on the Future Money podcast, if you could have lunch or dinner with one person dead or alive, who would it be?
I think it would be the French philosopher Voltaire.
Interestingly,
in the 18th century, he said, fiat money always returns to its intrinsic value of zero.
Here we go. I didn't know Voltaire was
He's actually one of my favorite French philosophers, so I would love to have lunch.
You know, I've asked this question to I don't know how many dozen people on the show. It's the first time I get Voltaire. I love it. I love it. Richard, thank you very much for being on the show. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this podcast. Hopefully it was insightful and useful. And hopefully you enjoyed it as much as I did. You know, if you like the show, make sure you subscribe. Give us a rating. It really helps us more people discover the show. But also make sure to check out my YouTube page as well, where we have a lot of educational content available there as well. Richard, thank you very much. Thanks for being with us today. Thank you, everybody at home. And see you guys next time for another episode of the Future Money Podcast.
Thank you.